From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capitol Notes podcast for Friday, October 29th. I'm John Myers from KQED with an all-star cast to talk about the governor's race. You know, when we say all-star cast, you know what that means, Anthony? That Juliette's here.
Yes.
I feel famous.
No offense to Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly and blogger for the LA Times.
None taken.
But Juliette Williams, the always snappy.
Oh, is that right?
The always
snappy. Now you're setting me up.
always snappy correspondent with the Associated Press, who's covering the governor's race, along with a lot of your colleagues. You guys are like everywhere.
We're trying to be. That's, you know.
That's the AP's
mission.
That's
what people count on the AP for.
That's the AP's mission.
And what do they count on public radio for, John?
To be there in a broader sense. What do they count on you for?
Whatever.
Blog guy. Okay.
To tell you what you were wearing.
All right, sweet. Well, now that we have totally gone off track once again at the beginning of the podcast, we can try to dial it back into the race for governor. So here we are, the weekend before Election Day.
The end is in sight.
The end is in sight. Thank God the end is in sight.
Careful what you wish for.
Well, hey, I know. Careful what you wish for. But you first, Juliette, you are chasing these folks down all over the state more than York and I are. What are your frequent flyer miles looking like these days?
They're good. I've had a few trips to SoCal. Maybe not as...
You were in Long Beach for the big throwdown, which we'll talk about in a minute.
I was. Good times.
Where else have you been on the campus? Well, you've been everywhere.
Yeah.
You've been everywhere.
I'll be
and where
everywhere
are you going to be on election night, Juliette?
On election night, I will be in the AP Central.
Ooh.
Are you gonna be, in Los Angeles.
Are you going to be the one with your hand on the computer keyboard
saying,
send out the message. The winner is...
I want no such responsibility. Thank you very much. That's a complicated metric that
How
involves a lot
work?
Of math.
That's
and
a different
chin stroking, right?
Isn't it involves a lot of math and chin stroking and... Men in suits.
Mm. But will you be in the... to get us off on a side. But will you be there with the group of people who make that call?
I'll be in the newsroom next to where the group of people make that call.
I see.
The bosses.
I see. And we will all be eagerly waiting that information.
LA Times makes their own calls.
Oh, I'm sorry. And is that where you're going to be on
a
Tuesday
different
night?
Metric with different math and different chins being stroked.
And will you be among the chin strokers?
No, I will not be. Well, I may... No. I mean, I may be stroking my chin, but it won't have anything to do with deciding who wins what.
Well, when. Lucky it'll both
be,
of you.
It'll be, how do I write this again
about
this race?
What's another word for defeat?
And I will be waiting. I will be waiting for both of you, your respective organizations, to write my story for me as I sit in Oakland with the Brown campaign for election night. So we'll see what happens. And we have, this is a plug to the podcast listeners, a live 3-hour statewide newscast, a special edition of the California Report, Tuesday night starting at 8 on your local public radio station, all up and down the lovely Golden State.
Fun.
Where we have Mark DiCamillo of the Field Poll, several hundred analysts, people like me, several hundred, a cast of thousands. Anyway, that's Tuesday night. So there you go. So let's talk about the Field Poll and other polls. Field Poll out today. Out on Thursday. This is Friday.
Right.
I got that lag of taping and broadcasting of this. Field Poll, Jerry Brown, 49, Meg Whitman, 39, which follows the LA Times last week where the spread was 12.
13, I believe.
52
to 39.
Sorry, the spread
depends
was 13.
Depends how you read it.
13, which we'll get into.
Right.
CNN had a poll this week that had Brown up by 7. We know PPIC, we talked about on the podcast last week, Anthony and I did, which had Brown up by 8. You notice a trend here, except for what the Whitman campaign says is going on, which maybe I'll just start right there because there's no other way to talk about it. On Thursday, the Whitman campaign sent out a memo saying all the polls are wrong except for our polls, which show us dead even or slightly ahead. And so I get to this point of where if they were right, this would be the single greatest collapse, would it not, in the history of American political polling? Okay, I know. Nobody wants to jump out.
Yeah.
But the point is...
My polling history.
2004?
I know, 2000, the presidential election. But I guess my point is, I mean, at a certain point, I mean, it would really fundamentally alter how all of us cover politics. If every one of these independently conducted polls showed the race that far off. That's not to say that at the end of the day, the race still won't be decided by 3 points, 2 points, 4 points, but I
mean... But your editors are sending you to Oakland, right? Not to Universal City, where Meg Whitman's going to be. Is that a matter of geography or
No. It's a matter of trying to decide where we think the race is going. And it looks as though it's Brown's race to lose. But that's based on polling. So what do we know?
But then again,
no one's ever spent $175 million on a governor's race, and Meg and the Republicans have their much vaunted get out the vote strategy. I don't know.
When you hear people talk about get out the vote, which we call GOTV if we think we're cool, or actually if we think we're cool, we don't call it GOTV. But I mean. Yes. Even pollsters like Mark DiCamillo will tell you that that may give you 1 point, 2 points in the final vote, but that can't make up a huge gap.
But we have the enthusiasm gap this year.
That's right.
We've got all kinds of gaps.
The national Republican tidal wave.
It's a gap, tidal wave. So what do you, I mean, Juliet, why don't you tell us? I mean, you've been out in the field more than Anthony and I have. What do you make of this race right now?
Well, it looks like the character attacks have worked on Meg Whitman. I mean, she's been under siege for a few weeks. She had the allegations about the housekeeper, and then, you know, the unions have launched, as she will remind you frequently, a volley of negative ads that remind everyone about the voting scandal and, you know, and these polls...
Her lack of personal voting.
And you know, these polls show high unfavorability, that she's just not very popular. That's not to say that Jerry is extremely popular in these either.
But yeah, the field poll that came out a Thursday morning showed her unfavorable rating at 51%.
Yeah.
And that it has upticked pretty noticeably several points over the last month since Field released their last survey. Brown's was consistent at 47% over that month. So a bad month. And I don't think anybody disagrees. It's either been a bad or challenging, depending on your viewpoint, your worldview, for Whitman over the last month.
Not good. I mean, it hasn't been good. We can talk about Long Beach as well. I think what's interesting about the polls, I mean, the LA Times poll and the Field poll, I mean, say what you will about them, but the fact is that Whitman isn't even pulling Republican registration in those two polls. Mm-hmm. I think that the LA Times turnout model had 40% Republican turnout. Whitman was at 39%. Field was something similar. And so
it shows
that Whitman has problems not just with independents, not just with Democrats that she was openly appealing to, you know, try to win this race, but that there's still obviously some members of her own party that are not completely comfortable with her, and it's a problem. I mean, look, we've talked about this a lot before, about how difficult it is for a Republican to win statewide in California, that the registration spread is now 13 points in this state, and that's a huge advantage for any Democrat starting out. It's true for Jerry Brown, it's true for Barbara Boxer, and it's true for Gavin Newsom or Dave Jones or anyone else who's on the ballot.
And as you just mentioned a moment ago about independence, I mean, the feeling always is that you can't be a statewide Republican candidate in California and win if you don't do very well with independents. And that's the other thing that the field poll certainly shows is a real dropping out of support among independents for Whitman. So
women, Latinos, and independents.
Pretty much every
demographics that she had targeted.
Well, pretty much every subgroup, though, of voters, almost every subgroup, by gender, ethnicity, region, difficult numbers for her in a lot of parts.
We know that the history will be written this way, that the Nikki Diaz episode was the defining moment in this campaign. Is that true? And you think that's true?
I think that was one in a series. I'm not going to obviously.
We can do the
forecast
post,
the race.
We'll do the whole postmortem after the election.
But Brown's people say that their polls show that that's a couple of points, but that that's not a 10-point gap. That they didn't see some huge surge in support for him solely based on that.
But mark my words, the national narrative on this race, if Whitman does indeed lose, will be was all Nikki Diaz.
Well, let's look though, because we talked about the month, and you referenced Long Beach, which let's talk about here in just a moment. The bizarre drama that was the Long Beach Women's Conference with Schwarzenegger, Whitman, and Brown all on stage together this week. But just rolling back the clock a little bit before that, so. Because I think a month is an instructive number, especially when you look at some of the polls that took, you know, about a month between times they sampled the voters. So we had the first debate on September 28th. The very next day, we got the Nikki Diaz story dropped in our laps. So the Diaz story took up a bunch of time. It bled into the second debate. I think most people believe that in the three debates, Brown, on the whole, did better than Whitman did. He was either able to answer the questions better. He seemed more comfortable. She seemed more stilted. She seemed more uncomfortable. I mean, that is a fairly accepted wisdom out there.
And a lot of people thought she did very – I mean, I think, at the beginning, you know, at the UC Davis debate, the expectations were low. You know, Brown's a seasoned campaigner, said to be really
– well, the Whitman campaign set the expectations very low, but still.
Sure. And I think I don't think she did well in Fresno, but it's questionable how many people actually saw that debate that was targeted at Latino voters. But I think she did pretty well in Dominican.
Yeah, fair enough. But I mean, I don't know how many people saw the Fresno debate, but I know they heard about
the Fresno debate
and they saw the clips on the news because it was right – again – you know, the Whitman campaign dismissed the Nikki Diaz story as, oh, it's all planned political timing. I don't have any dispute with the fact that it was probably politically timed as to when the information came out. That's separate from the actual issue at hand. But the timing was fantastic if you're a Democrat or you're a Brown supporter. Yeah. It was right after debate number one. It was right before the Spanish language debate.
Absolutely.
And so as a result, I think it intensified the coverage and the notice of that debate, and I think that was a very tough time for Whitman.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. In the third debate, I think she definitely did better. But again, talk about a debate nobody saw. The Chilean miners were being rescued and things were going on, and that was not a lot of traction. I think the Whitman campaign also has had an ad strategy that has continually pounded Brown primarily on his record as governor and taxes. It's been a taxes mantra from them. And when you look in the polling, like the PPIC poll last week, the people don't seem to be buying it, at least in the people that they talk to. So, you know, again, all the things that you could hit Brown on, was that the right strategy? I mean, you know, we won't know until Election Day. But talk about Long Beach. Juliet, you were there. We watched it on TV. Did you watch it on TV?
Webcast.
Ah,
yes. Webcast.
I watched the Cal Channel. So,
you guys probably heard it better than I did because at times I was actually in the audience and the crowd was so loud that when I went back to listen to my tape, I had trouble hearing. But
I had my bobbleheads all set up on the desk. I was good to go. But
between the cheering and the booze, it was quite an event.
So most of the people who would listen to this podcast know a little bit about what happened. It was this oddball conversation, Matt Lauer and Schwarzenegger at the beginning, where Schwarzenegger conveniently gave himself an A for his entire time as governor.
No, but then he had some other grading system.
No, he gave himself an A on a scale of 1 to 10.
Or the other.
No,
I think he gave himself
a 10
on an A to F.
A to F.
Okay, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I think 10 kind of comes from his bodybuilding
days.
But yeah, so he gave himself...
Maybe it's the Austrian school system.
He gave himself a perfect score, which, you know, we'll have a different podcast about that sometime. And then Brown and Whitman come out on stage, and it was... We all felt it was going to be awkward anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like, well, they don't really want to debate, but, you know, what do you talk about and how do you do...
In the midst of this crowd that's been hearing inspirational speeches all morning. And
cancer survivors and poetry and life-affirming.
Yeah,
Laura Bush.
Live your best life, Oprah-isms.
Laura making George Bush jokes, I think, right before.
Yes.
And then we get to politics.
Yes.
Ooh.
Well, even they start out pretty lame and lukewarm on the whole, my mother inspired me, my grandmother raised me. I mean,
well, Meg Whitman came out first, right, and said, I'm my mother's daughter.
Yeah.
And she talked all about her mom and, you know, very, very, personal comments, but clearly she knew the audience she was playing to.
Sure.
And I felt like, you know, Brown was over there going, you know, felt like in his head he's probably like, wait a minute, I got to come up with somebody.
Right.
Totally.
My mom and my wife, they
my
rock.
My grandmother.
Yeah,
my late mother used to read Bible stories.
Uh-huh, yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely.
She made me who I am, wrapped me over the knuckles.
Yes.
And then it got weird and squishy, and I actually remember what happened in the middle, because then we just get right to the end, where Matt Lauer said, let's get rid of all the negative ads. Will you both pledge to no longer run negative ads? And so was it real in the audience? Was it the same way of this, like, applause? Like, yes, Matt, no negative ads.
Absolutely.
And then the absolute boo, I hate you politicians.
The crowd turned on Meg Whitman so quickly. I mean, when she came out, she got by far the louder applause than Jerry Brown. But by the end of that, when she wouldn't agree to that sort of, somewhat unfair request of her on a stage in front of 15,000 people a week before an election, and they weren't having it. They were not happy.
But it does show – I think it shows – I mean, the issue notwithstanding, the conversation, the interaction sort of shows something larger about Meg Whitman. And, you know, because Brown came out, his first comments were, hey, negativity is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. And the crowd started booing.
And he's like, wait a minute. Retool.
He pivoted
quickly. He pivoted very quickly. And, he showed his...
And Whitman did not, you know. And I think, you know, George Skelton wrote about that today, about how Whitman doesn't seem to have the ability to ad lib a little bit. That's not in her repertoire. And look, I don't know. That's probably something you learn being a public figure for 40 years.
Sure.
That's part of it. But I think it's one of those things where, you know, you dismiss this idea of being a career politician, but there are some skills you learn in that time that help you out.
Or you have some kind of exposure to the public a lot before, because Schwarzenegger had no political
Fair
office,
right.
But I mean, had, you know, tremendous numbers of years of political of public exposure. And so, yeah, you do wonder then if you have been a CEO where your interactions with the public and the press are very scripted and choreographed and not like that.
Whitman had eBay Live, which is a big event in Boston every year.
But I mean, the business press is very different than the political press.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's
we're just mean. Is that what you're saying?
I think petty.
We're petty and ruthless. And I mean, when we don't
obviously
feel like
biased.
We get our question answered, we're going to follow up and follow up where I don't.
Well, let me. I just want to briefly. I mean, Matt Lauer's taken a lot of crap. I think among different people, pundits, some even some reporters, some snarky little things about the question. I don't know what you all think, and I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot if you want to say anything, but my two cents is that I think the presentation of the question was a gotcha, was designed mm-hmm. to be a gimmicky whatever. I think the point about the way the public perceives the tone of the campaign and the ads and the criticisms is valid. And I think he could have done a different job by talking about the way that the ads are talked about. And Ms. Whitman, why do you run those kind of ads? And Mr. Brown, you know, something.
Sure.
And then also, he doesn't know enough about California politics, I guess, to have ignored the fact he mentioned surrogates. But, I mean, the massive amount of anti-Whitman ads are labor
Brown.
Union independent expenditure,
right.
$25 million dollars worth of ads at this point. So it wasn't the topic that he brought up. It was the way that it got into it, which was designed for this thing. I mean,
to follow up and say, you know, well, are you going to pledge right now? You know, okay, I'll give you 24 hours.
Right, shake hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's have Arnold be the broker of this.
And it was Brown who eventually had to say, it's hard to work out a deal in the middle of all this.
He threw her a lifeline.
He tried to.
Of course, 20 minutes later, sent out a press release and cut a new ad. But that's another story.
And then launched his own ad of showing her, you know, sort of squirming under the lights.
Well, my impression, and I wrote it the same way, too, was just that you could feel Jerry's mind working
going
in the middle of this going, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I can go one step further. I can go one step. I will do it.
Right.
I will do it now. I pledge to do it.
Which is a lot easier to do when polls show you up 8 points.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you have, you know, $25 million in surrogates who will continue to run those negative
ads,
even if you...
And he also knew that the bigger he went on mm-hmm. it, the more, because I think he sensed that she was nervous and whatever, the more it would box her in. And she mm-hmm. got boxed in. But Anthony, as you said, she didn't handle it very well. If she had been able to think on her feet a little bit, she could have turned the, you know, well, Matt, this is not really exactly a fair thing. All of these unions have been putting all the, you know, Jerry, ask Mr. Brown, ask Governor Brown, will he talk to the unions, which he can't.
Even though he can't anyway.
But the point being, will he talk to them?
Will he tell them right now into the camera, stop running those dirty ads?
But would that have appeased that crowd? That crowd wanted up with people positivity, right? I mean, they wanted ironclad pledge.
Oh, they did. You're right. Yeah. And Matt Lauer definitely fed into that. But, you know, at least then she would have held her own a little more. I think some of the uncomfortableness of people was that it seemed like she was trying to have it a little bit both ways.
I enjoyed a moment that couldn't hear probably in the hall, and I don't know if I heard it listening to it on TV, which was right after this whole thing starts, and there was this, and Arnold is loving this whole thing.
Oh,
you know, he's just laughing.
Basking.
He just thinks this is. At one point he said, "Now we're having fun."
Yes,
but he leaned over to Meg Whitman, and he said, Mike Murphy's off stage back there. He's schwitzing.
Yes. Yes. We wrote about it. Yes.
Right. Yiddish
yes.
word for yes. sweating and yeah. profusely, I imagine.
Yes.
But yeah, Murphy, the consultant that worked for both Arnold and now working for Whitman, you know, just this whole notion of this is not what a consultant wants the end of the race to get into, this yeah. thing about who looks the who looks to be the good guy and pulling off of their ads or whatever it was. Yeah. And so, of course, that's what the story was out of this event. And yeah. I mean, you know, I long wondered why Whitman would agree to do the event, even before the poll numbers. I didn't think it was her strong suit, especially with Arnold. It's Arnold's event. It's Arnold Maria's yeah. event. I mean, you know, she's
been... You know, she's in a tough spot because she's the first woman candidate. Well, you know, could be the first woman governor. I think right. it might have looked poorly for her had she declined it, a women's event, you know, the first ladies hosting it. And one of her top campaign officials, Jillian Manis, has been a co-chair of the women's conference for several years. So
it was kind of hard to avoid doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think it was.
But with Jerry Brown, and what was right. Schwarzenegger doing on stage? I mean, it was just weird.
It yeah. was totally
it was weird.
It was a very unusual event, to say the least. Yes. And yeah, it seemed to drive a couple of days of stories there. And again, it just, you know, there's that whole thing of appealing to the women, and yet the polls show she's struggling with women. Mm-hmm. She hasn't made that connection in a lot of ways. Even the ads here at the end, you know, what I thought was her closer ad, which I guess I was wrong. It wasn't her closer ad.
No.
The 60-second in the camera, you know, looking right. at the camera.
I know it's unhappy choice.
I know a lot of you hate your choices. I know yeah. this, you know, basically.
Right.
I know you think I'm a billionaire.
I'm just a billionaire. Yes.
Yeah.
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 You know, it was the personal ad. And also, too, but it was like the first time you saw a photo of her kids mm-hmm. on television in an ad, I think. No, it's not the first time?
Oh, no. Just, no. Moving on.
Well, but it was the first time. Well, but it's the first time you really heard her talk about her family, in a way, I think, in the
right.
ads. And you know, voters are looking to connect somehow. They're looking for something other than the business bona fides, I think. I mean, I think that's one of the challenges. Is politics is a personal connection kind of thing.
Right.
It's not
and
all
she,
policy.
Well, she ran this campaign like a CEO, like a business plan, like an, you know, let's execute the strategy.
Well, her biography is not great. I mean, for a politician, I mean, she was born into an affluent community in New York, you know, lived a corporate lifestyle, you know, became a billionaire, then decided to run for governor. I mean, it's not exactly a Horatio Alger story. It's not, you know, she has to run on a resume because her biography isn't, frankly, from a political perspective, isn't that compelling. I mean, you know, Jerry Brown's maybe only marginally more so because of the family dynamics for the same reason that, you know, that George W. Bush was an interesting story just because his father was president, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more of the dynasty
yeah.
thing. But you know.
And he has the whole Jesuit.
Yeah.
You know, going to the.
His 2 weeks with Mother Teresa, you know, the
and
whole
can
thing.
Can I just say one more thing to the Long Beach thing? You know, Schwarzenegger, you know, in some ways, I guess you could argue maybe he was trying to short circuit this weird, awkward moment by saying, you know, oh, look, they're both great. But when you listen to what he said
yeah.
about both candidates,
it wasn't even.
Is it obvious who he liked more?
Well, he told us he would tell us who he voted for after the election, right?
Well, I guess we'll see. But I mean, you know, he said, Meg Whitman, she'd be the first woman and she was great in business. And then Jerry, and for a minute.
Let me tell you about this guy.
He was a great governor, a great mayor, a great, you know, it's yeah. like every time he would say great, I felt like I could see the Whitman camp going, oh, oh.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the two, I put this in my story, the two of them left the stage together.
Yeah, exactly,
Whitman,
Brown, yeah.
Schwarzenegger and Brown.
Oh.
They walked away and Brown was, you know, whispering something in the governor's ear. I don't
like,
know.
Like, thanks for saying nice things, but now do me a favor. Don't talk about me all the rest of the week. Because you're not exactly popular
yeah.
around these parts.
I don't think any of those folks. Maybe Matt Lauer, although maybe not.
Yeah, well, I think he felt the love in the hall. I'm not sure he felt the love after he started looking online as to what people had to say about the way he did it. So we're in the last few days of this race. I mean, you know, we should never say never in politics. All kinds of crazy things can happen at the 11th
Absolutely.
Hour. But people vote. People have already voted. There's a lot of absentee voting mm-hmm. going on. People, you know, and so there are only so many people who show up to the polls. typically, right, conventional wisdom is the people who vote at the polls in this state tend to skew Democratic. They tend to skew urban. They, you know, it's not a Republican's best group of people, in which case, if you're a Republican struggling, the Whitman campaign argues she's not, can you do anything else? Sure, or are you going through the motions, which I, you know, hate to say in one way, but.
Well, there's still, I mean, a lot of people turn in their ballots at the polls, too, people who get their absentees. But, you know, you can't spend $175 million on this and not see it through to the end. Anything could happen.
Yeah. The other, we're not really talking about the other race here, but I just want to put the polls in because I think actually gets back to the only other point I'd make. Anthony's over there.
There's some crumbs on your desk here.
Tending to the crumbs in the studio. And that's the U.S. Senate race. So the field poll out today, Friday, as you're hearing this, Barbara Boxer, 49, Carly Fiorina, 41. That's an 8-point gap, which is larger than Field had it last time. The same CNN poll I referenced earlier, which I think has a larger margin of error, had it at 5. Most people seem to have Boxer at a slight advantage, still holding on. But it does get to this whole thing about the enthusiasm gap and what happens on Tuesday and whether the networks and AP, you evil AP, or whoever, starts calling races around the country for Republicans. Republicans have taken the House. Whatever it is, yada-da-da. People always worry about a West Coast phenomenon, about voting there.
Yep.
I've heard some Democrats say they're really worried about that with Boxer because they don't want to depress that Democratic turnout. Could that, though, have an impact on the governor's race? I mean, could Brown, if ostensibly he's up by 7, could that make it a 1-point race? Could that make it tighter? I mean, is that... You know, people, we all have this debate about this Republican tide, Republican whatever. Right. Does it stop at the Sierras? This is lovely imagery in all the writing we're doing. Right. You know, but I mean, I do wonder about impacts, not impacts. I mean, is that...
I think the impact of that kind, was it 1980 when they called the race for Reagan,
Carter Reagan
before the polls were closed in California? But as Juliet alluded to earlier, I mean, I think that is also lessened by the fact that probably about a third of the people who are going to cast ballots in this race have already done so. You know, that with the growth of early voting, of mail-in voting, that becomes less of a factor. I mean, there's just fewer votes hanging out there.
And if you believe the polls, those voters aren't as predictably Republican as they used to be. By mail people now
more closely reflects the general voting population. But
yeah. Any other thoughts on this Republican tide phenomenon or what it could do?
Well, you know, I'll be interested to see what happens in California if it carries here. But I don't think people were probably Democrats have not especially a lot of love lost for Barbara Boxer either. So I don't think that was going to drive the Dem turnout to the polls.
I guess not. But the only other thing I would say, and again, I don't want to put too much credibility in any one poll, though I know the political campaigns think we do too much. But it's very difficult about what to do with polls.
They think we do too much, but then they
only if they're losing
obsessively study them themselves every night. So.
Right. They hate a poll unless it says they're winning, and then they love that damn poll. Right. But I was just going to say on the CNN poll again on the Senate race, the reason I think I meant to circle back to this is that they had a likely voter registered voter difference. That if the registered voters actually turned out, they think that in their poll, Boxer would be up by like I think it's 11 or something like that. So in other words, that enthusiasm, that there is a bit of an enthusiasm issue among Democrats,
but it's
granted
always,
not to the extent maybe that the rest of the country is predicting one.
But that 6% difference between likely and registered is not just an enthusiasm gap. That's just the reality of
people who don't vote.
The people who don't vote, a larger percentage of them are Democrats just in terms of the registration. Republicans always close the registration gap on Election Day. That's always been true I don't know if it's always been true, but for as long as I can remember.
As long as you, old man, can remember. So is it going to be a late night on election night?
It's always a late night on election night, isn't
Well,
it?
I know, but, you know, for the regular people, not for us who are up filing all night long.
Yeah, if you want to know what's going to happen with Prop 25 or in the 5th Assembly District or the 11th Congressional District, it might be.
Particular specific ones, but not necessarily the big races. We have to wait for the AP to call them.
Yeah.
That's right.
I get no say in the actual calling of it, so I can't really predict.
But is control of the Senate going to depend on Patty Murray and Barbara Boxer? Is that
depends on how bad a night is for everybody else. Harry Reid and back east and others. So I don't know, but I know that we'll all be dutifully doing our jobs, reporting the news.
I know that I much prefer when the call goes out later. I hate it when, you know, like last time with Schwarzenegger, and I think AP called it at like 8:05 or something.
Yeah, no drama.
That's no fun.
It's no fun to have it that early, but I do like, as a reporter, I do like it to not be too late at night.
Sure.
Because we need, this is a broadcaster thing, you want the victory and concession speeches on your live statewide newscast.
Right.
I want to collect the tape so I can start figuring out what the story for the next day is.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I'm you know.
We're selfish like that.
Exactly. I'm a very selfish
You have a
person.
Bedtime. We understand.
I'm selfish. I'm a reporter. Exactly. It's bedtime. All right. Well, we'll see what happens next week. Maybe we can figure out a time to do the lovely postmortem. You have a postmortem event you're hosting.
You're going to be participating.
Yeah, but a very small part of your very large Capital Weekly.
And Juliet and I might have another one. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
All right.
Oh, well, there you have it.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Capitalweekly.net, right?
With an O.
With an O. All right. Thank you, Juliet, for sitting in. Juliet Williams from the Associated Press. You just go by
my
one
pleasure.
Name.
Yeah,
like Madonna.
That's fine.
Anthony York from Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.